My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas. Professor Alexander Dugan, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I say trenches metaphorically, but it's not metaphorical anymore, is it? It's really happening close to where you are.
Exactly. I think that the war, generally speaking, is the path of the human being. So the war existed always, and they represent a kind of possibility that is included and being here in our existence. It is very sad and very dramatic, and it is very tragic as well, but it is so. So we should accept the war as it is, as possibility, and that will give to us a responsibility, the feeling of responsibility for war. Because it is possible, we need to accept it as such in order to avoid it when possible. And war is always near. It is always near to South Africa, it's near to Middle East, it is near to us, to Russian, it is near to Europe. So when we are a human still, the war is here as possibility, and we should not say, oh, let the peace prevail. In order to grant the peace, we need to accept this being with the war. And that is why I think that the difference between metaphoric and real trenches, it is always very subtle. So symbolical war is always here, and it could turn easily in the normal war, the war of warfare, direct warfare with victims, with suffering, with death. And when we consider the war being very close to our being, that is the only way to deal with war with responsibility and try to avoid it. Because if we accept such possibility, so if it is here already in our consciousness, we would behave ourselves different. We should know the price of the war. And this is the only way to avoid it or to reduce its losses, its sufferings.
So you're saying war is inevitable, and without war, there can be no peace.
Absolutely. The peace and the war are two elements of human existence. When there is no war, there is no peace. When there is no peace, there is no war. When we lose one, we lose the other. And that is why I think that pacifism is irresponsible. So because it teaches us, oh, no more wars, there will be no more war, we should do everything to avoid avoid the war at any price. And finally, this pacifist attitude becomes totalitarian. So in they start to kill to avoid the war, to start to demonize the opponents. Becomes total war. When we consider that war is possible, we could find the form for war. We could find the limits. We could put limits for war. For example, if there are two troops fighting each other, they should not affect civilians. They should not involve in their operation on confrontation the civilians. For example, it is only possible when we think that the war is possible, can be real. So we immediately we start to try to limit its negative effects. There is as opposite total war, total war, when everybody is involved against the will of the population. And I think that liberal attitude to the war is really turn any conflict in total war. And realist attitude to war can reduce it. Maybe it could. We could not. There are situations when we could not avoid the war. But at least we should to put some limits to it, to introduce some rules in it, and avoid the worst.
You're not saying that we should go looking for war, though.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely, the war. We shouldn't look for war. War will look for us. we should accept that, because the war exists always. That is part of our identity, of human identity. But, and on the other side, the term of peace always was linked with some additional term. For example, Pax Romana, Pax Russica, Pax Europea, Pax Americana. So that is not something arbitrary. It is essential element of the peace, because there should be someone who is the who takes all the responsibility of the war. And so it could be universal if we are dealing with universal empire, as in the case of Roman Empire, but always it could be challenged by the other people trying to establish their own empire. So we, first of all, the peace should have an additional term. The peace as such is quite utopian and quite dangerous as idea, because we should fight for some special kind of peace, explaining who is responsible for concrete peace. That is the only way. And we immediately have some subject in order to say, oh, you have promised us to keep peace, please keep it, or get out and give this duty or this responsibility, this burden to other. And that is important. And what is going on now is precisely this challenge to global peacekeepers in the Western, in the person of Western world, that cannot anymore grant the peace. So that is the peace of unipolar world that is breaking apart, breaking down now. So because Russia is not satisfied with the peace or imposed by the West, and is challenging that. So that is very, very critical moment. But Russia wants to install its own peace, Pax Russica. And China is going to defend Pax Sinica. And that is very, very interesting situation. So there is not the war against the peace. There is the war between different conceptions of the peace, between different additional terms. Pax Americana against Pax Russica, Pax Americana or Pax Occidentalis against Pax Sinica, Pax Chinese peace. So, and all these concepts have their own name. We know only one name: liberal peace, liberal global government. Only Davos or Soros, open society, name for the peace. That is normal for the Western-centered humanity. But there is the other part of humanity, and the major part of humanity that doesn't accept that. Russia, China, I think India, Islamic world, we are not satisfied with how the West how West leads the world. We are not satisfied with the rules of global liberal order. We are not satisfied with liberal Western peace. We are not satisfied with Pax Americana. And we are opposing now against that the new multipolar vision, accepting different poles with their regional, local responsibilities to keep peace.
But, I mean, liberal peace is not peaceful.
I would say when there is nobody to challenge it, it could be peaceful. It could be peaceful if everybody agree with that. So it is viable. So there is. I think that the problem is there only one civilization, Western liberal postmodern civilization, or there are many civilizations. If there are some other civilizations outside of this Western liberal one, so in that sense, the liberal peace becomes aggressive because it tries to impose its own rules on other civilization. That is conflict of civilizations explained by Samuel Huntington. And that is very interesting. So in United States, there are many realistic thinking persons who as well don't accept this liberal peace, and they criticize Mearsheimer, Huntington, and many other. The realist tradition and international relations accepts multipolarity, accepts sovereignty as highest level. So and because now it is clear that not any country can be sovereign. In order to be really sovereign, you should possess some amount of weapon, of territory, of demography, of economy, many, many characteristics, elements combined can give the ground to this claim to be sovereign, really sovereign. A recognition of United Nations organization is not enough. That is fictitious sovereignty. So only those states are really sovereign that could afford to stand against possible attack of global power. And now, in that sense, not national state should be recognized as sovereign in modern situation, because only those can be considered to be sovereign who can afford it in the reality. So the real sovereignty demands a kind of great space, a kind of nuclear weapon, I would say, demography, resources. And in order to create this sovereignty, you need to have some minimal control. And that is much more than the most of the countries could permit for themselves. So Africa can be sovereign, Islamic world can be sovereign, Europe can be sovereign, but not France, today not. And Russia as Eurasia can't be and is sovereign, but not alone, not totally limited by this historically casual borders that we have after the fall of the Soviet Union. So that is not about the border between the states, that is the border between civilizations. And I think that this precisely, if we accept there are few civilizations, but not one, few, at least few. So we need to consider that in some moment, any civilization should claim to its sovereignty. That is what is going on now with Russia, openly, explicitly in Ukraine, and with China, with Taiwan. And I think that we're just in the beginning of this reaffirmation of the sovereignties of the civilizations with S at the end or in the plural. So this plurality of this civilization is fighting against the insistence of the global liberal West to be unique civilizations. Now, the West against the humanity, the liberal West, globalist West against all other civilizations. But Russia is much, I would say, much more radical in affirmation of our own independence today. So that is part of our heritage, of our tradition. We fought the West all during all our history, starting from adhering to the Byzantine tradition, not with Catholic Christianity, continuing this affirmation of Orthodox Christian identity against Western, and the fight for Ukraine is the constant of our history. We fought for Ukraine with the West many times for Kyiv, and that started from the early period of Russian history. So for us, it is a kind of constant situation when we on all turn of our cyclic history, in all cycles of our history, from time to time, we are coming into direct confrontation with the West, fighting for borderlines, for zone between us, and reconquering the territory of Ukraine. That repeats from century in century. And liberal world order pretended recently to put the end to all the civilizations, to confuse, to mix all civilizations in one global world government. As today, in these days, Klaus Schwab leads this forum of a global government. Liberals insist on their project to put all civilizations in one basket, under one world liberal government ruled by global international oligarchy. And Russia fights precisely against that, not against Ukraine, not against Zelensky. It is the fight for the principle of the global world order. And we are challenging liberal, unipolar, a globalist world order, and we are defending our own identity, sovereignty, our great space, our right to establish Pax Russica, Russian peace.
Is Vladimir Putin a globalist?
Not at all. He is anti-globalist. But he came to this position not from the beginning of his presidency. It is interesting. From very start, he tried to reconcile two irreconcilable orientations. He tried to reconcile participation in the globalization. He shared liberal agenda. He thought that participation in the global structures and organization would give Russia access to high technologies, and he tried to be the part of the global world, but under one essential condition, on the condition of the sovereignty of Russia, and that was contradiction. And he tried at any price to reconcile, to unite globalization and sovereignty. But finally, that was totally impossible. He made one step toward the West, and West responded with some accusation, humiliation, continuation of expansion of NATO, and that repeated all 22 years of his rule, of Putin's rule, and finally he came recently, to the conclusion that that is impossible. So either sovereignty or globalization. And only now, after 22 years of efforts to reconcile both orientations. He has arrived to the conclusion that it is impossible. And now he started this direct confrontation with the globalization. Now the Putin fights globalists, fights directly globalization, insisting on the particularity and sovereignty of Russian civilization.
Is this incursion into Ukraine symbolic?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because the problem is that Pax Russica, or Russian as civilization, Russia as independent pole of multipolar world, is responsible for post-Soviet space. If Russia lets the parts of this post-Soviet space to come under control of the West, that means that Russia is not anymore sovereign. And that was clearly said and formulated by Zbigniew Brzezinski, the American geopolitician with whom I have met to 2005 in Washington. And Brzezinski has said in the 90s that without Ukraine, Russia never can become once more independent pole. But with Ukraine, it can, and it will be independent pole of multipolar world automatically, almost automatically. But that is why the West has done everything in order to tear Ukraine from us, to impose on them some special newly created ultra-nationalist identity, artificial, because there are two peoples in Ukraine, one Eastern population and Western population. They belong during all the history to different states, to different cultures, and they by the chance they became the part of Ukraine after the fall of the Soviet Union. So they never belonged. Ukraine never existed in the history. That is newly created entity and with only one goal, to destroy Russian revival, to destroy Russian return to sovereignty. And that was clear for Putin. So modern day special military operation, we call it so, in Russia, it is clearly symbolic, very, very symbolic action. It is the challenge to global liberal world order. As recently Fukuyama has said in his article, I agree with that. That is real. The war of Putin is war against liberal world order, against unipolarity, against pretension on universalism of liberalism and liberal ideology. But that is not only on the behalf of Russia, but that is for the principle. So that is symbolic war for symbolic goal. That concern, or should at least, that should concern everybody on the planet, not only us, Ukrainians, Western Europeans, Americans, everybody.
Why is postmodern liberal thought so pervasive in the West?
I think in the West or in the East?
No, in the West, actually. But it doesn't matter, because it seems to be traveling everywhere.
So, first of all, I think that there is a kind of logical development of liberalism. So liberalism was a kind of ideology chosen some centuries ago by the Western European part of humanity as the destiny. And the liberalism, the core of liberalism, is idea that we need to liberate individual from any kind of collective identity. That started earlier. That started with Protestant Reformation, with destruction of Catholic church in the northern Europe and pretending that there between the God and the individual Christian should not be any other intermediary instance that started from that. And after destruction of traditional estates of Middle Ages, capitalism that destroys any link to aristocracy, to the priesthood, to the traditional clergy, or peasantry, everything was destroyed as collective identity, and bourgeois identity has replaced this collective identity. Bourgeois identity is individual identity. And after that, in a new era, there was destruction, at least theoretical, of national state, civil society, liberation from nations. And after that, the last, modern state of this liberation is gender politics, because individual mm-hmm. is above of the sexual identity. Sexual identity is collective. So we need to liberate individual from collective identity as the sexual identity. So gender politics. And tomorrow, the last step is to liberate the human individual from humanity, because it is as well collective identity. And that is the line.
Transhumanism.
Transhumanism, exactly. Mm. And that is the line. That is the main line. That is the kind of the line of the main history of the West. The West is following this line, and all the phases, all the stages are very logical in that. Fighting against, for example, nationalism as deviation of that, communism as other deviation of this line, and to the end of the last century, the liberals, they have arrived to this postmodern liberal global structure. And because for the Westerners, it is the destiny or progress or self-sufficient, self-fulfilled prophecy, wishful thinking, that everything should be exactly like that, because the West is the avant-garde of all the humanity. That is why the West is universal. And all the humanity under this influence, in colonial way, is under great pressure of this mode, of this ideology. So that is ideological expansion, ideological colonization or neo-colonization of the West. But at the same time, against that attitude emerge more and more and more protests, for example, in Islam world, because Muslims, they reject generally this attitude, because they don't want to lose their traditional identity, their faith, their collective structure, their communities. China has alternative communist Confucianist attitude. Russia has its own values based much more on the Orthodox Christian communitarian values. So India has its own civilization. And if we think, so this expansion of the liberal ideology and postmodern culture, it is just, it is the destiny or fate of just a part of the humanity. As Huntington, for example, in chapter of his article, he has used very, very, very interesting expression: the West against the rest. There are Westerners, there are Resterners. And Westerners, for the Westerners, liberalism is the destiny, manifest destiny to liberate from every, that is why transhumanism, that is why robots, that is why technocentric network organization of cyberspace, that is why all this cyber control, this migration to the virtuality. That is the as well the technocratic process that is embedded in this ideology. And for the West, it is the fate and destiny, but not for the rest. Because the rest can have other directions to follow, other identities to defend, and other value to affirm, values and to affirm. And I think that precisely the conflict of civilization is here. It is about how universal the destiny of the West is in the reality. And now in virtuality, it is universal, in virtual mass media image. But reality check is something quite different. And that is not the chance, that is not not just one phenomenon that Trump has gained some years ago the presidency in the United States. And he has started to criticize this unipolarity, this globalism. He called that swamp. Swamp not only the corrupted government of United States. It the swamp. It is all this global system to identify Western liberal ideology with the destiny of humanity. And Trump, that was criticism from within, and Putin is criticism from without. So, and Xi Jinping and China, it is as well challenge to this destiny, to this universalism from without. And now we are on the they're interesting because South Africa, your country, as well, joined BRIC. And BRIC is a totally different alternative world order. So it is not, we are speaking not just about abstract options and choices of different different societies. It concerns you, South Africans. It concerns everybody. So what is going on? So, or we accept postmodern liberalism as destiny universal. So we are Westerners. We align with the West, or we are with the rest. And rest today obtains the shape, or takes shape, or begins to take shape, the rest. And the rest is not the void. It's not just negation, just refusal, no to the West. It is proposal of alternatives, global order, and global approach to what the society, human, history, time, God, death, or space are.
It's interesting, though, Professor, because while the West is trying to universalize the entire world, it seems to paradoxically be destroying itself.
Exactly. And that is interesting, because the West, that is the historic reality and ideological reality, they don't coincide. Historically, the West is a very concrete form of human experience in the part of the world with ideas, with classical basis of Greek or Roman tradition, with Christianity.
Aristotle.
Yeah. Aristotle, Plato and Christianity, Christian thought. As such, it is something with content. And ideologically, modern West, it is liberal West. It is something like liberalism that should to be imposed on the rest. But the first, this liberalism has colonized the West itself. So the modern West is based on the self-negation. in order to be open society as Soros and Karl Popper imagine it to be, in order to arrive to this pure abstraction, you need to destroy totally the real West. So modern West is anti-Western. Modern liberal, postmodern, postmodern liberal West is a kind of corpse of the real West. It is the West without life, without identity. So exactly, globalists, first of all, they destroy and torture the Western mind, Western identity, Western soul. They destroy Western values because they exchange these concrete historical values against some new progressist agenda that has nothing to do with the real West. And that is cancel culture. That is wokeism that tries to cleanse, to destroy everything that doesn't fit to this new liberal progressist agenda, and that is anti-Western. So I think the Western, real Western, should be with us in our fight against globalism, because we are defending multiplicity and multipolarity and pluralistic vision of the civilizations. Not only one, we have not only one universal destiny, not only one universal fate for all of us. So West is the part of humanity with its values. East can have different options, different civilizations, not necessarily liberal democracy, civil human rights, civil society, open society,
gay rights, gay rights, feminism, and all that. Black Lives Matter.
For example, I make difference between all this, but all this obviously a part of the modernist progressist agenda. I am rather in favor of rehabilitation and kind of revival of black identity. So I'm together with the fight for the black people to reaffirm their dignity, their sovereignty of cultural dignity. And for me, that is very important. But the way how it is done in the United States, it's a new manipulation. It is not not liberation of Afro-Americans, because that is the final destruction of their own roots, our culture. So it is not justice, not return to the justice, because injustice was done. Injustice is still being done to Afro-American by this crazy maniac postmodern liberal elites, because they try to impose on them the totally artificial identity. Soros doesn't ask Afro-American, what do you want? What do you think you are? He says, you are that things, you should fight, we need to say excuse us. And he doesn't want to hear the real Afro-American. And Afro-American has no right and no liberty to find their way to their identity, because their identity was destroyed when they were converted in the slaves by this unhuman Anglo-Saxon civilization, I would say. So this is not about excuse. That is about of restoration of the dignity of the different culture. And that is precisely that liberal West doesn't do. So that is very important, because in order to beg real pardon will be let the different civilizations flourish, not impose this liberal set of value as something universal. Yeah. To ask and to hear, to recognize all kind of civilization, archaic, African, Muslim, Russian, Chinese, without imposing only one set of rules. When the Westerners come to Russia, they say, oh, you should be such on such, you should be that or that. That will be the progress. Oh, otherwise, you will be considered as barbarians, as totalitarians, and we need to fight you, to destroy you, to put the sanctions on you. So that is precisely the same behavior is in other part of the world. We are stronger than many other civilizations. That is why we are on the front line. But the other civilizations, other cultures are behind us, and we feel how they are, and we know how they feel, because they see if, or better, when Russians win, that will be the common victory against Germany.
I like your positivity, Professor. You know, Yuri Bezmenov, I think you might know, a former KGB operative, when he gave a speech in the early 1980s on TV in America, while he was interviewed, and he said that that basically the postmodernist trajectory was destroying America from within and the West.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And there doesn't seem to be a way out.
I think that we see the way out in the United States. Trump is a way out, because Trump has proposed to America the decent exit from the situation, Amerexit. So as there was the Brexit, Amerexit, they should get out from globalist agenda. So they should abandon these universalist, progressist, totalitarian turn. They should abandon, Americans should abandon cancel culture, because it is not American value. Freedom of expression, yes, but that has nothing to do with cancel culture. Cancel culture is limitation of the freedom of speech. Wokeism, it is a totalitarian way to say about the neighbor how wrong he is, how criminal he is. That is very totalitarian features. So modern liberalism, it is full of these totalitarian features. And Trump has suggested the best way, the easiest way, let us conserve everything in the United States, but let us recognize the reality that we need to change the orientation of our society, of our country. And for example, if we imagine that Trump has won the elections, I assure you, nothing of the sort like this special military operation in Ukraine would happen. So Trump has shown the humanity the way. And I think that was the real catastrophe, that the people represented precisely the worst aspect of postmodernism, progressism, this totalitarian liberalism, totally corrupted elite with Biden. Have this kind of people has won in the election, or maybe they have stolen election, as Trumpist's firm insists. So I could not judge, because I'm Russian. I'm under sanctions in the United States. I work only once there. I'm under sanctions from 2014 without visiting Crimea, neither Crimea nor Donbass, only for my opinion, for my words. So that is incredible. I'm the first, the only one, maybe now many people like myself, but in the 2014, I was only one person sanctioned in the United States and Canada for my opinions, that they weren't too radical. So just I have developed unipolar discourse. Okay, I criticize liberalism, but liberalism should normally accept that as possible, but not modern days liberalism. That is quite different thing, because they cancel everybody who is against them. For example, I have develop my criticism of liberalism in my book, Fourth Political Theory, where I have criticized all three modern Western political ideologies. Liberalism, communism and fascism.
Fascism.
And fascism. And I have dedicated to criticism of liberalism one chapter, to criticism of communism one chapter, to criticism of of fascism and nazism, nationalism, including nationalism, one chapter. And against all that, against this explicit criticism of fascism and nationalism as being Western, as being totalitarian, as being unacceptable for us, I am still, against all evidence, I am called nationalist and worse. So that means that liberals cannot afford anymore any real discussion. So they just blame you. They say, how you dare to attack liberalism? If you are not liberal, you are fascist, you are communist, you are Stalinist. So if you are free, totally free to be liberal, left liberal, right liberal, but you are not free not to be liberal. That is pure
right.
Totalitarian racist attitude. That is common. That is common. So all debates start and end with the same accusation. So how dare you attack liberals if you are against us? You should be Hitler, or Stalin. And that is a kind of very suspicious because if they cannot come with alternative arguments to speak, to hear, they are obliged to be victim of direct confrontation. So that is where the war comes in.
But let's talk about some of the beautiful aspects of the fourth political theory. Tradition, for example, is something that should be celebrated, and the family.
I think that we can say that outside of the Western understanding of political norms in liberalism, in communism, or in fascism, there is the huge richness of alternative political structures. For example, abandoned by the West when the West entered in the modernity, and we could call them pre-modern Western values, for example, empire, estates, Christian, Catholicism, religious society, communities, and so on. Or we can regard, for example, non-Western political system of Hinduist, Buddhist, Japanese, Chinese, Muslim, African, Latin American. So we have a huge choice of the values, of the structures, family, tradition, God, eternity, relations between community, not between individuals. So hierarchy, sacred hierarchy, a hierarchy on one type, religious or secular of different type. And all these richness is totally refused, is totally abandoned by the West. So fourth political theory start with negation and come to affirmation and ends with affirmation. And what fourth political theory affirms? Everything, multitude. For example, if we are Chinese, we could restore Chinese empire or to be satisfied with communism. And nobody could say, oh, that is not normal. If Chinese people want that, that is legitimate. If Russia wants to keep marriage between men and women, if
we want
men and women, if we conserve tradition, spirituality, church, religion, some special organization of society, including if we would love to restore monarchy or tsardom or authoritarian rule, it is up to us to decide. So, and the same for Muslim world, for India. So fourth political theory is not prescriptive. It is just preparation of the space from the colonial way of thinking. colonial way of Western-centered modern thinking. So that is decolonization. And when we say, let us accept everything what is included in the Western modernity, for example, if West wants to follow liberalism or communism or fascism, it's up to the Western people to say that. We have nothing against that. If you are satisfied with three political theories or with liberalism, that is up to you to decide. We could respect your decision, but under one condition: keep it to yourself. There is nothing universal. Human rights are not universal because they are formulated as such by Western liberal ideology. So nothing is universal. And if we prefer to create something other, we have the total right. So that is based, but we should base on identity, on the Dasein, on the Dasein as a people. People, not nation, what is very important. Google translation could not make this difference because people against nation, but Google translation is totally involved in the Western way of thinking, is totalitarian, racist way to translate. It is when it translates nation and people as the same term, as the synonymous. So that is Western way of translating embedded in the technology. Technology is not neutral. Interesting. But in order to emphasize that we are dealing with people in Russia, narod term, special term, narod, German folk. This folk is not the nation. This narod is not the nation, people. That is concept of organic community, not national artificial political construction from individuals. So people is a kind of spiritual, historical, cultural, natural, organic identity. Not absolutely nothing to do with ethnical. Ethnos has nothing to do with the people. People could consist, and most peoples consist from different ethnical group and forming some historical and cultural unity. That is the subject of the fourth political theory, but the peoples are different. And for that reason, fourth political theory is not universal. So for Russia, it is one thing. For example, when I'm in Iran, they say, oh, Mr. Dugin, you describe our own Shia Iranian system. So we recognize ourselves in fourth political theory. The same
right
somehow in other societies. Mm-hmm. So fourth political theory is not just projection of Russian mind, of Russian universalism. It is sincere multipolar approach. We don't pretend to know what is good for you. We just want to defend for us and for you the right to decide for yourselves. That is fourth political theory.
The term that you also used was revolutionary conservatism.
Yes, that is the term that we conceive following Western way of progressism, that the history is the line, linear, and all the revolution should bring us ahead. And ahead is precisely defined by liberation process. Ahead toward means, toward artificial intelligence, cyborgs, chimeras, transgenders, transhumanism. That means ahead. And that is the way of social progress, of social revolution. Conservative revolution is quite opposite. It is idea that we could decide to return or to get to the in the direction of the eternity, because the eternity was abandoned in the beginning of the modernity. And we have put everything in the time. And time, we have put everything in the time going straight ahead toward artificial intelligence. And that is reducing limitation of the revolution. And conservative revolution, it is invitation to make the leap toward eternity, not to the past. Because we're not about restoration of the past. We conservative revolution is about restoration of the value and ontological presence of eternal dimension of life. And hence, God, church, tradition, sacredness, soul, human dignity, the existence after death, before death. So that is very important. We need to recover eternity, not the past. Conservative revolution, it is not about returning to the past. That conservative revolution, it is the restoration of the dignity and of the dominance of eternity. And from that principle, we should develop concretizations of how to do that. Because everybody could understand that. Chinese could understand that, because the balance of yin and yang principles forms for them Tao, eternity. Muslims will interpret that differently, because eternity for them, that's Allah, their God. In for Christians, that means restoration of the full meaning of our rituals, dogmas. So when, for example, we have communion in Christian church, we are communicating with the eternity, and that gives to this rite all the value, because communicating with the real eternity in the communion, in the miracle, in the liturgy, that transforms totally our being. And the same for other kind of tradition, archaic tradition, great tradition. And if we recognize that there is eternity, we could recognize that there is time, because time is possible with eternity. But when we negate eternity, the time is collapsing. The time becomes something unstable, something paradoxical, that the time is stoned somehow, and this is not human time, not time of life. It is not lifetime. It is just machine time. That is cyber time. That is mechanical time. And we are losing the reality of being in time. So we are not just becoming, and becoming not of us, because we are losing our identity, we are liberated from any kind of collective identity. So we are transforming into becoming, pure becoming, without life, without identity. We are just becoming, and that is clock, that is mechanical. And I think that liberals and postmodernists, they seek to destroy human life and to transform us in something post-human. That is why liberalism is so dangerous. It is suicidal ideology and homicidal ideology. And that it looks, it sounds very, very, very funny, very, very, quite smart and attractive, but if we get deeper, we see behind them something very, very dangerous.
What's that saying? The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Exactly. And now we need to choose, because there is still the time to decide. A conservative revolution, it is decision to stop that, to get out from this to this direction that is imposed on us as something inevitable, taken for granted, and so on and so on. But that is the will of some elite that pretends this elite to lead us to take responsibility for us, and they don't want to hear us, to hear our claim to that we don't want that. So they insist, they persist in their strategy, and that is why we need to revolt. That we should rebel against them, and I think that should be universal revolt against modern liberal elite, not only in Russia or in China, but everywhere.
Everything that is beautiful is turned into ugliness, and what you're saying is that there's a desire amongst many of us to return to spirituality, to beauty, to tradition, to art, to the things that make us to the things that give us meaning when you wake up in the morning.
Exactly. And all that we are losing. All that we are losing, and we are obliged. There is the pressure. Cancel Dante, because of this, he was monarchist, he was Christian, and so on. Cancel Dostoevsky, because he was Russian, and Russia now is leading this operation in Ukraine, and so on. So cancel everything. Cancel American tradition, cancel European tradition, cancel Greco-Roman tradition, because Aristotle had slaves, so let us cancel him. And let us denounce Plato and so on. So I think that is precisely that loss of the beauty, the loss of the value, the loss of the life, precisely. And liberals say they defend multiplicity and originality, mm-hmm. but that is totally imitation of the same pattern. For example, what we see in posting on global network is just the same. It is totalitarian dictatorship of the same. They repeat the same rules, the same patterns, and there is no real creativity. Any real creativity, life creativity, is reduced to nothing. So ugliness, it is the norm. So they have reverted and subverted all kind of values. What was great, what was good, what was beautiful, and all that is mocked upon. It is destroyed, is subverted. And I think that is anti-civilization of the liberal globalism, and that is why they could not recognize the proper limits. For example, when Trump affirmed that the West should return to the reasonable limits, so that would mean the and for globalists, because comparing with some normality, accepting some normality as other, their claims will be destroyed. They could operate only in the ambience totally controlled by them. That is why virtual control. Now we say, for example, I was the first victim of the Google, because the Google has canceled my email account. The billions of people on the earth could have Google, everybody except myself. So I am so dangerous for Google that my account was canceled, my Twitter was canceled, my YouTube channel was erased, everything, and I could not. Make the other account because they trace my computer. So that is concentrational camp. And after that, they have repeated to Trump canceling its Twitter when he was still president of the United States of America. Now all our country is under process of canceling. So. Now it is not rare, but I was the first to get through this procedure until the end. So Wikipedia, for example, in Wikipedia, if you, my wife, I have only one wife from the beginning, from the, my youth to, until now. And in Wikipedia, there is said, now, in present time, he has a wife, Natalie. And that means that I had different wives before or something like that. But I have and had and will have, I hope, only one wife. And when my wife starts or tries to change this formula because it gives the wrong opinion that I had had the other wives, it is impossible because it totally controls. They say it's free. Mm-hmm. It is just only pejorative information about me you could put in the Wikipedia. My books are prohibited to be distributed on Amazon. So all free world becomes immediately concentration camp, liberal Gestapo, when you tries carefully to say some criticism against that. And if you hit the point, so that is the end for you. You are canceled, your career is finished. The people are threatened. Everybody who tries to develop my ideas in modern free world, they are immediately threatened in academical, political system. They say, for example, we just want to give the critical approach. No, you shouldn't. It is impossible. It is prohibited. It is strictly banned. So, and if the world, free world, can I could understand, for example, some radical man or woman advocating killing people, eating children and destroying everything, bombing, exploding. I could understand such attitude because against such crazy terrorist figures, they should some measure to be taken. But such people prosper in the internet. So there are so many people defending precisely such extremely stupid, extremist, terrorist things without any problem. But for academic, for academic criticism of unipolarity, you declare the enemy, public enemy number one. So that is very, very particular. And when I'm coming this path. That's not about myself. That is example. There was very interesting saying after the Second World War. Some German said, when they came to take out Jews, I kept silence because I wasn't Jew. After they came to take out communists, and I was silent
because I wasn't a communist.
Because I wasn't a communist, and when they came to take myself, and there was nobody around me, there was nobody because I was the last, and that is I am first to be taken as the aim of this world order in some way, being philosopher, being intellectual, not being fighter, not being political figure or administrative figure, but my fate or my example now is repeated by almost all Russians. Now all Russian citizens are more or less in the same position. Accounts and banks are cut, network network presence is destroyed, and so on and so on. But it is not still all. If you follow, for example, the fight for liberation against globalists, you will be the next. So that is not the end. So they are punishing everybody who disagree with them, who is the real racist, who is real Nazi, who is real fascist? Soros, Bill Gates, Biden.
Fauci.
Yes, exactly. Fauci, tutti, all of them. So I think that that is example. And I think we shouldn't repeat that. We should get a lesson from the destiny of one of us or for one country, because who will be next? It is not up to you to decide. They will choose you. They will appoint you sometime as the next victim, and they will apply to you exactly the same false argument they apply now to Russia, and they applied before to myself personally. So we are going the same way, and we need to stop them. That is why we need conservative revolution and fourth political theory, a theory of multipolar world and the practice of multipolar world. And we need as well Africa on our side. So that is very important, because Africa, it is the future. Africa, it is a new continent. Africa, it is new pole. And I think that liberation on Africa will start. It is in the future. We have prepared for that, but it is not just to repeat the European and the Western example, because all this decolonization period was the repetition of the same errors and failures of the Western politics. Africa should find its own political identity, its our idea, and I have great hopes on African continent, African peoples, who now should not only liberate themselves from the West in the negative way to getting from this negative experience, but to imagine something new and to give us the example how great the African soul is and African tradition is, because we misunderstand totally. I have dedicated to Africa two volumes of my book on civilizations. It is called Noumachia, 24 volumes, and two of them are dedicated to Africa. When I started to write, I thought it is about some post-colonial cultures, very weak, and I have discovered universe. I was totally I fall in love with Africa, with all this richness, with all this dialectic between the tribes, between the cultures, great empire as Ashanti, great culture as sub-Saharan Africa. So there are so many metaphysical systems there, not only one. But many of Africans still regard their own identity with colonial eyes. So we need to decolonize the minds of African people. That is not about black or white, or because that doesn't mean anything. African identity has nothing to do with the color or biological, ethnical anthropology. That is about cultures. And to discovery of this richness, cultural richness, beauty of Africa, and depth of African metaphysics, we need to do that together. It is not, we could not say it is up to you to decide. We need to discover that. We need to help African people to create, to recreate, to return, to organize their conservative revolution. So Africa should play most important role in the global conservative revolution.
Have you been to my side of the world?
I was only in the Northern Africa, in Arabic countries, but it is my dream. So now the access to West is totally closed to us. So I will be obliged to visit.
It's not only the sanctions, but I think the vaccine passport also stops travel.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't travel.
Yes. One follows the other. So first that COVID restrictions, now sanctions. So, but I think that I have many friends in Africa, and I have some groups of people developing forced political theory in Mali, in Senegal, in the Niger, and other, and so in Chad, in among Tubu tribes in Libya. So there are some points in Africa that already we have we meet each other in different places. So there are some relations with Africa, but that is just beginning. I think that is the continent of the future, and I would be happy to visit more African countries, and I hope that Southern Africa that plays leading role in somehow in representation of Africa, for example, in BRICS, can as well be the path, or can become the path, the space of this new independent, self-sufficient, great African logos.
In front of you, there's a crystal ball. What do you see?
So, in the crystal ball, I see the content of being going through myself into myself. The current of being going through myself, through my eyes, through this ball into myself back and to the being back. So I see circulation of being. And the crystal ball is the perfect metaphor of transparency, of piercing through of some concentration of light, of thought, and return to the origin. So I see in crystal ball the metaphor of conservative revolution of being.
Where can people follow you if they still can?
So there are some sites and internet. I have accounts still. They don't destroy it, everything. They didn't destroy everything. Some accounts in the network in Telegram, AGD Chen in Telegram, that Russian network. But there are in the network in the internet. There are many links. So I have published huge amount of articles. There are books that you could order in spite of all the prohibitions. There are my publishers always find new way to distribute my works. But to follow me, it is to follow the inner voice of yourself. I'm not about myself as a person, as individual. The only thing I dream and I want to be intermediary between you and you. And so in order to return, try to help to return to yourself and nothing else. So I don't impose my individuality. And if you would like to follow me, follow yourself.
Professor Alexander Dugan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me in the trenches. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.